The Monday before last year's royal wedding between William and Kate, my wife and I and our three daughters went for a picnic in one of London's famous parks, St James's, just by Buckingham Palace. There was nothing really unusual about this, except my wife's friend and her three children happen to live in St James's Palace, the home of the three princes, Charles, William and Harry. Afterwards, we decided to go for a stroll around the park after the picnic to soak up the atmosphere of the coming royal wedding. But before we did that, being English, we needed a cup of tea. So we went back to my wife's friend's house. As we entered past the armed police, the prince's private parking spaces and into her home, we sat down and enjoyed a cup of tea. Now, if you know anything, if you've met me before, you just know me slightly, you know that basically I've got ants in my pants, and we sat down and finished a cup of tea, I want to get up. There's loads of children, and they need to go to the toilet and do this and that, so I think, oh mate, I can't sit around for this. So I just kind of stroll out, take a little stroll as you do around St. James's Palace. As I poodled out, thinking about nothing really, I looked up, and walking towards me was, believe it or not, Prince Harry. It was one of those things, I was just walking out, and I looked up. Now, at those moments, you don't have much time to think. So I said to him what I say to most people, "All right, mate." And he said, "Hi." And then he just walked off. Now, to say the very least, Prince Harry is a privileged prince. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's born into probably one of the richest families in the world. Born living in one of the world's great cities, London. Born with the opportunity of the best education. When you think of Prince Harry, privilege is his middle name, which actually is just like the prince we're going to look at today. Just like Prince Harry, the prince we're going to think about today was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His family was not merely one of the richest, but the richest. His city, Babylon, was not merely one of the great cities of the world. At the time, it was the greatest city in the whole world. Around the whole city of Babylon was a magnificent wall which spanned 12 miles. The walls were wide enough and strong enough for chariots as they went along them to overtake. Positioned within those walls were 8 gates. And once you were in, you had the privilege of beholding the stunning hanging gardens and the 53 marvelous temples within the city. As you looked at Babylon, as you focused upon this young prince, Belteshazzar, he just dripped with privilege. His birth, his riches, his city, his education. Yet, amazingly, none of these things were his greatest privilege. You see, his greatest privilege was not his wealth. His greatest privilege was not his education or his home. And you may be excused for missing actually what his greatest privilege was. His greatest privilege, according to God, was his bedtime stories. His bedtime stories of destruction, where this great mighty Babylon dominated the world. As he sat in his bed and his mother or his grandmother told him the stories, should have told him the stories of just how this mighty nation had conquered the world. Their empire seemed to grow and grow. Its influence seemed to permeate everything. As the privileged prince looked around his great city, he knew that he was top dog. And the city was seemingly invincible. But his next bedtime story was the dreams. The dreams of his father. He'd have grown up many times seeing his father worried, scarred by the nightmares that he had dreamt. And one by one, the prince would have seen. He'd have experienced that as his father would have been terrified with these dreams, he'd have seen the wise men of Babylon one by one coming in. Him then demanding that they tell him the dreams. But the wise men there with no idea how to tell him. The wise men there completely lost for words, no wisdom whatever to shed on light. But then, suddenly, he'd have heard or maybe even seen this young Jew, Daniel. This young Jew arrive on the scene who'd been taken from Jerusalem. A man that had wisdom like no other man. A man who claimed to know the one true God, which was incredibly hard to deny, as every dream Nebuchadnezzar spoke of, Daniel interpreted effortlessly. He'd have spoken of destruction. He'd have heard of dreams. But also he'd have heard of deliverance. He'd have heard of the stories, the great stories, the true stories of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the miraculous escape from the fiery furnace. He'd have heard those stories. He may have even seen them. And then the last story would have been of danger. Maybe this was the image that stayed with him the most. The image of his father, this once great king, had now been humbled to his knees. This once great king who had ruled the whole known world was now crawling around on his hands and knees like a wild animal. You see, his father, King Nebuchadnezzar, had been one of the main characters of all of these stories. He was the king who had seen the triumphs. He was the king who had listened to Daniel explain the dreams. He was the king who had seen the young guys in the furnace. Yet never once had he chosen to bow his knee and be humbled. He'd seen these things. He had heard these things. But he'd never humbled himself. He'd never bowed his knee. The God who gave Daniel the interpretations, the God who delivered the three guys from the furnace, the God who'd given him the whole kingdom. So he refused to bow the knee. So what happened? Well, God made him bow the knee. Just look at verse 34 in chapter 4. At the end of that time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eye towards heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion, very different to his own. His kingdom endures from generation to generation, very different to his own. He's come to know that. All the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. No one can hold back his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At that time, my sanity was restored and my honor and splendor were returned to me for the glory of my kingdom. For the first time, his father had stopped, as Psalm 2 says, plotting and conspiring. For the first time, he had stopped living for the world's bling. For the first time, his dad, instead of rising up against the true God, fell to his knees. And as Psalm 2 says, he kissed the son. He took refuge in him. These were the privileged stories and experience that this young prince had grown up with. He'd have known them all. They were his bedtime stories. Therefore, the question that should be running around all of our minds is this: how did he use his privilege? He was a privileged prince. How did he use his privilege? Because as we all know, with great privilege comes great responsibility. Let me finish this first part of this talk today with this question for you to ponder in your minds. Let me ask you, as I've repeatedly asked myself this week, how many of these stories do you know? Were you brought up with these stories? In Sunday school? Did your mum and dad tell you these stories? How many stories do you know? Some of them? Most of them? All of them? And then add to that all the stories that you, that I, have the privilege of knowing about the Lord Jesus. If knowledge of God's acts and truth is the most profound privilege each of us could experience, you and me are even more privileged than this young Prince Belteshazzar. Our privilege is bigger. And if our privilege is bigger, then our responsibility is greater. You may have come this morning never thinking of yourself as a privileged person. But if you know those stories and you know about Jesus, you are the most privileged person on this planet.